This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Prices are up 3.2% over last year. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Prices rose 0.4% in February. That is more than they did in January, which was more than they did in December. A lot of that was housing and gas, but even taking those things out, the numbers aren't great. Jeffrey Cleveland is chief economist at Payton & Riegel and joins us. Good morning.
Good morning, Sabri.
Okay, so month to month, prices rose 0.4% in February, after rising 0.3% in January, after rising 0.2% in December. That is 3 months of the wrong direction. Am I missing something?
On the headline measure, yes, we are headed in the wrong direction. If you exclude food and energy, you can look at the so-called core CPI. Unfortunately, Sabri, that was also up 0.4% in the month of February. And I think 0.4% readings are far too high for the Fed to achieve its inflation target.
On the other hand, the core inflation, as you mentioned, if we compare it to a year ago, is down slightly, like the trend looks like it's in the right direction.
The year-on-year measure compares to some high readings we saw a year ago. So on a year-on-year basis, core inflation has slowed a little bit. But I think what matters most was the month-to-month readings, because if you get month-to-month readings that are pretty strong, then over the course of time, you'll have pretty strong year-on-year readings.
The way that the Fed measures the cost of shelter, rent in particular, it's not very up to the minute. Is that a significant factor in the inflation readings we're getting?
Well, shelter was the biggest driver of the rising core CPI in the month of February, and shelter has been a big driver of core CPI over the last couple of years. That being said, Sabri, we can look at core inflation ex shelter. This is the so-called super core metric. And even on that metric, the super core was up 0.5%. Month to month in February, which is far too high. So we're still seeing a lot of inflation, a lot of price pressures for the average American, even when you exclude shelter.
Do you think this is going to cause the Fed to reassess when it might finally start lowering rates?
Yes, because I think the plan for lowering rates is contingent upon policymakers being comfortable with the month-to-month rate of change in core inflation. They want to be comfortable that inflation has sustainably cooled back to 2%. The data like we saw this morning would not make me comfortable with that, Sabri. It's possible that over the course of the year, inflation cools down, but I think you have to push out your expectations for rate cuts, maybe into the second half of the year.
Jeffrey Cleveland, chief economist at Payton & Riegel, thank you so much.
Have a wonderful week.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Palo Alto Networks. As you innovate to transform your business in today's digital world, how do you stay secure? At Palo Alto Networks, our mission is to protect your digital way of life. Whether it's unprecedented opportunities or uncertainties with AI and whatever comes next, we continually deliver innovation to make each day safer and more secure than the one before. More at paloaltonetworks.com.
Now to news of a real economic bummer that maybe isn't so bad after all. One of the more downbeat economic themes in recent years has been the view that that millennials would be the first generation to be worse off than their parents. But recent research actually casts some doubt on that. Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell has been taking a closer look, and he spoke with my colleague David Brancaccio.
I mean, we know millennials have had it tough. We all went through pandemic, but for them, wage stagnation, great recession, unprecedented levels of college student loans to pay back. delays in buying a home. Am I missing anything?
No, those are the main reasons why millennials, they've been called the unluckiest generation and the lost generation. And sure, life might be difficult for parents, you know, job setbacks and career disappointments. The reward for their struggle was the expectation that their children would surpass them when it came to jobs, income, wealth. That is, until the millennial generation came along.
All right. But you have some new research, recent research, that calls this assessment into question.
Yes. And there's a growing, almost cottage industry of economic studies that are challenging this intergenerational gloom. And the latest, it really grabbed my attention. It's by two economists, and it's titled, "Has Intergenerational Progress Stalled? Income Growth Over Five Generations of Americans." And what I like about their research is both its historic scope and their broad measure of income.
And these researchers have some upbeat findings about intergenerational progress.
Absolutely. So they focus on the years 1963 to 2022, and they're looking at the 36 to 40-year-old age group. And each generation, David, was better off than the previous ones, including millennials. For example, by their calculations, millennials had a median household income in their late 30s that was 18% higher than the previous generation at the same age. That said, their study says that progress for millennials and Gen Xers was noticeably slower than for earlier generations.
Well, how come?
The main reason? Fewer hours worked. And this mostly reflects the flattening in women's labor force participation rate that started at the turn of the millennium. So, of course, I read that. I don't know about you, David, but I couldn't help thinking, well, maybe the quality of life has gone up with fewer hours on the job. At least maybe that's something to consider.
Yeah, it depends what you measure. And what we see in there, more stocks, less homes?
Yes, a real shift in the origins of generational wealth. So you're absolutely right. You know, millennials, they don't have high rates of home ownership compared to the previous generation. But boy, they own a lot more stocks in the era of the 401k and similar retirement savings plans. Second, the economist data suggests that intergenerational gains are picking up. Now, the slowdown may well reverse itself in coming years.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor Chris Farrell in St. Paul. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, David.
That was my Marketplace colleague, David Brancaccio, with senior economics contributor Chris Farrell in New York. I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.